This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio.
Broadway's my beat. From Times Square to Columbus Circle, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world.
Broadway's My Beat with Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover.
Scarlet flows out of neon, stains the summer night that ebbs from Broadway, and time is on the run. And far down the street, a woman who for a moment stops to lean her head against the far crest of night, lets spray of summer lamplight brush against her hair, walks on, and the nighttime on her shoulders. So gather the small coin, run to the phone booth, place the call, make the bid on what's left of warming dark, and drum the wall, and remember that other summers were spent in a similar phone booth. And then the throat that croons, no answer, and the click, and the return of coin. So go home. You've made a dime. Where I was, and Detective Mugovan, black slick of river, and jut of pier into it, and slow dance of garlands of colored light against hulks of river shape. And a man, newly gathered from the gleaming waters, man beaten, man unconscious, man in time interval and small space that precedes dying.
Nothing, Danny.
No identity, Mugman? No cards, no wallet?
Said nothing, no... which means nothing. Except the bruises where he was beaten on his throat, around his head. Gash on his head, maybe from when he was thrown in the river. Hit one of the pilings, maybe.
Talked to the man who pulled him out?
Yeah, I talked to him.
Well, Mugman, is...
The man, Charlie Downs, his name was. Charlie said he was taking a little late walk down by the river. He was back there, that alley there, when he saw the fight on this pier. Two guys fighting real quiet, real hard, Charlie said. Then one guy threw this other guy into the river and ran away. Charlie jumped in and saved this man. Charlie says he don't need a medal. Says whatever we think is fair will be all right with Charlie.
You'll talk to Charlie some more, how much?
I will. Because I like Charlie. That's cool by the river, isn't it, Danny?
From nearby, from the street that edged the waterfront... Life is convertible in a summer night. And the instant is made up of that, and the match struck and touched to Detective Muggerman's cigarette, and mechanical moans, and men waiting at the scene of violence, and its publication upon the small winds of night. Violence now in the hands of those job-rated by the community, doctor, photographer, measurer. So leave there. Go home. Try to sleep. And it's only really the humidity which keeps you awake. But another July day comes around, another moist working day, and Sergeant Gino Tartaglia.
You know what Mrs. Tartaglia said to me 2 minutes into my farewell to her this morning?
I don't have any idea, Gino.
She said to me, no matter how hot it is today, think cool thoughts, Gino, and tell Danny. So I'm telling you.
Oh, thank Mrs. T for me.
Danny?
Yeah?
What kind of cool thoughts?
Gino, have you got anything for me?
Like sliding on ice?
So help me, Gino.
Charlie Downs, the man who jumped into the ocean and saved his fellow man last night, has been released as a mere stroller who was happily upon the scene. He was happy for the opportunity.
Thank you, Gino. Go on.
The man who he pulled out has been identified.
Oh?
By recognition, more than by science.
Gino...
Dr. Sinsky, being an old fight fan, recognized him. And then so did some of the other fight lovers who happened to be...
Who was the man who was pulled out of the river, Gino?
Harry Bryan. The name ring anything? A bell or maybe...
I'm not sure.
Well, perhaps this will help it ring, Danny. Harry Bryan beat a man to death with his fist in the ring last year. Yes. An account from the newspapers of the fight. Killed a boy named Tommy Cullen.
You're doing very well, Gino.
Would you say cool?
All right. What else have you got?
Well, not too much more, Danny. Address of the brother of the boy who Brian killed, if that'll do you any good. And?
And what?
Notes and comments. Notes and comments of my own. May I?
Of course.
I searched the good Nat Fleischer's book on the matter, and records show that after killing a fighter in the ring last year, Harry Bryan's career has zoomed downward at a pace which can only be described
Thank
as...
Thank you, Gino. Is that all?
Indeed.
Thank you.
Come on in.
Why?
I saw you drive up in the car. I'm John Selak.
Harry Bryan lives here?
It's okay. Don't worry. Just sit and wait if you want.
For whom?
Yeah, that's a question. All right. This day and age, you never...
Mind if I ask you who you are?
John Selak.
This is where Harry Bryan lives, isn't it?
What do you think I'm doing here if it isn't?
What are you to Harry Bryan, Mr. Selak? A relative, a friend, or what?
Look at it one way. Both, you'd say. I book fights. Some of Harry's. That's all you cops know that promoters do, book. I'm his friend, and...
That's fine.
You understand, don't you? Not just a guy.
I said that's fine. You're a friend. You want to help, and you want to answer questions.
You bet. You bet I do.
Who would try to kill Harry Bryan?
You're not kidding. Who would want to kill a sweet guy like Harry?
You?
Oh, mister. Mister.
You haven't told me yet what you're doing here, Mr. Selak.
What you're doing, waiting for her.
Who?
For her, for Marva.
Who's Marva?
You kidding?
Who is she?
Harry's wife. Came over to see whether I could do anything. She said, yeah, you can. Can I borrow your car? I gave her the keys. I'm waiting for her to come back with my car. How can you refuse anything after you've reading the papers her husband gets beaten, thrown away in the ocean, and such a sweet guy? Promoted him a few charity bouts at the arena, so we got to know each other. You run into Marva. Tell her I'm waiting for my car.
Hello there, fella.
You're Russ Cullen?
This morning you tried, you couldn't say a wrong thing to me. I'm Russ. And you're a cop, huh, fella?
That's right.
I took off from work special so I could meet up with a cop. You want to come in, fella?
Yes, Mr. Cullen.
Yes, Mr. Cullen. Now, ain't that a kick? You want to come in? Come on in. See how clean and neat my everything? Because I knew you were coming.
Took off from work and cleaned house just because you knew the police.
Yeah. Fella. Happy day, oh, happy day.
Because you know Harry Bryan is dying.
You touched the crux, fella. You really did. The real crux. Deep.
Is that enjoyable, Mr. Cullen?
Yeah, it's okay, fella. You can edge into the happy time. Let's celebrate the clobbering of a louse, Harry Bryan.
Other men have been killed in the ring, not only your brother.
Other men, but not like my brother, not like Tommy Cullen.
That's why you beat up Harry Bryan, huh? Threw him into the river, wanted him dead.
Listen, you.
I'm listening.
You want to hear about my brother, about how Tommy Cullen got killed? They just want to cry from the mouth.
All right, tell me.
A Harlem Legionnaire. Club fight a year ago, March 8, 1952. My brother Tommy Cullen, matched in a semi-windup with Harry Bryan. My brother was just a punk, a club tramp, but with moxie. Tommy Cullen, my brother, had a heart this big.
Go on.
He's dead, my brother. A whole year, 4 months dead. You care he's dead that long?
You're going to tell me about the fight, how...
You ever seen Harry Bryan in the ring?
No.
Dirty. Vicious. Elbows, headbutts, rabbit punches, everything in the dirty book. Killer boy, that's Harry Bryan. Cut and hook for blood. Cut and hook and jab for blood, that's Harry Bryan. That's what he did to my brother. Had Tommy flat 5 times in 1 round, then the bell. Next round, Bryan carried my brother. Waltzed him, whispered in his ear, held him up. Next round, he killed Tommy. Beat my brother's brains in. Doc said that's what happened to Tommy Cullen. His brains got beaten in. From which he died.
Year and 4 months for you to wait. And last night you got to Harry Bryan for your brother.
Last night I was, take your choice, movie, bar, street, the gutter, any of those places I could have been. Take your choice. Any of them says I didn't touch Harry.
You'll stick close, Emma, just in case.
Oh, you flip fella? I'm not going to be out of town when Harry Bryan dies. I'm going to be right here, real close. Bye for now, fella.
Feels good, huh, honey boy?
Shh, Danny, quiet.
Well, I'm rubbing his shoulder. Feels nice, doesn't it, Harry?
His wife, Danny. His wife, Marva. She asked to sit with him at his hospital bed. She said she knew what to say to him so he wouldn't die.
What about him, Dr. Sinsky? How is...
Whatever words she knows, Danny, they will not...
Harry, honey. Loosen up, honey. Your back and shoulders. Doc.
Yes, Mrs. Bryan?
Harry's dead. I felt it when he died.
Mrs. Bryan, I am
Don't say
deeply...
anything, Doctor. Just do what you do for the dead.
What I was trying to say to you, Mrs. Bryan, I am deeply sorry.
You are listening to Broadway's My Beat, written by Morton Fine and David Friedkin, and starring Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover. An evening in July starts at the river before it closes over Broadway, and the heat of it drowses along the darkening street. Now and then a breeze, floated with dampness, slides along against the granite, picks a man waiting for a bus and wraps him in moisture. And skyward, the setting sun strikes a million glints that flicker and pale and coalesce and become a shadow. It's a sodden time. The handkerchief under the collar time. The man at the box office screams about 20 degrees cooler inside. It's a twilight dying on Broadway. But it's Broadway. And that's the reason you're here. And above it, and east, in a corridor constructed for exits and entrances upon pain and compassion, hallway designed simply so as not to intrude upon tears or laughter, where I was, and a woman, newly a widow.
Everything was done for him that could be done, wasn't it? Wasn't it?
Well, I'm sure that...
How do you know? You're not a doctor, you're a cop. You're a... What are you going to be to me now?
What are you talking about?
Large hand gently on the shoulder and say, be brave. I don't need you. Who needs you? Not me.
Well, listen,
Now what?
Well, that's up to you. I can take you home now or talk to you now.
Talk to me. Go ahead, talk to me.
Who killed your husband?
Chit-chat to be addressed to Widow Bryan. So young to be a widow. Shame about her husband, hit over the head and dumped. Let's ask her who did that to her husband.
Come on, I'll take you home. Come on.
No. You'll want to know about Harry, about my husband Harry, how he was there one day when I went to a fight. How he was there up there in the ring, in the corner, and at his feet a man.
The boy he killed.
No, that was later. First night I saw Harry, he knocked out an old bum in the first minute of the first round. And suddenly, I swear it was just like this. He looked out over the faces at me. And later, after the fight, I waited for him, and he came over to me, took my arm. It was an hour before we said hello to each other. You don't believe that, do you?
Well, perhaps that's not important.
No. You see, that's the thing that's more important than anything. Because after he killed that boy, it stopped being that way. Somehow, what happened destroyed Harry, too, as if he was the one that had been killed.
I see.
And nothing was all right after that. Harry'd take beatings in the ring, beatings after beatings. What made me love Harry? His strength? Death?
You threw him over.
No. I tried. I tried and tried. I was his wife. And I helped him. I tried to help. I tried.
Brief interval of July, then, set aside for summer lament and weeping. The woman removes her hat, removes amber combs from her hair, cascade of hair to shoulders, then face raised to sunlight, and the hair pushed in a fan from the back of her throat. Face stilled to sunlight, eyes closed, and stillness. And tears are dried in summer sun.
Will you take me home now, please, Mr. Crow?
And take her home. And the threshold be thanked, be touched on coat lapel, be dismissed. Uptown and west and north again to 104th Street and Stewart's Gym. And the men outside leaning against its facade and interrupt the drone of their summer talk. And one of them tells you quietly that he is Mr. Stewart who runs this place. And once when he first knew Harry, Harry was a good boy, unimaginative but good. And somewhere between Paterson, New Jersey and Madison Square Garden, Harry had picked up a little imagination and turned cute and dirty and killer, which was good for percentages and box office. But which turned sour when Harry killed Tommy Cullen in the ring. And this was Harry's trainer, he turns and says, and Harry's trainer talks quietly also.
all the while rhythmic and pace, beating a fist into the brownstone of Stuart's skin, and giggling quietly, and in between saying Harry was a good boy, real nice boy, no trouble and nobody. He wasn't any trouble, was he, Mr. Stuart? And Mr. Stuart says, go talk to Losey, boy working out upstairs. Go talk to Frank Losey. He knows about Harry. And upstairs, and be told Frank Losey's the boy in purple trunks, middleweight, working without headgear, and told, don't talk to him till the round's called. Frank?
What do you want, mister?
I'm from the police. I want to talk to you about Harry Bryan.
We got 1 minute, mister. You and me.
He died today. Did you know that?
Everybody here's been talking how he died today.
Anything you know about him that...
Used to work out with Harry Bryan. Manager told me he sharpened him up. I did. After a while, I stopped doing that.
Why?
You have to know, mister.
Tell me.
Somewhere, something happened to Harry Bryan. Got real mean. Real low. I tell his manager I don't work out with him anymore.
When was that?
Year and a half, maybe. Maybe half year before he got around to making Tommy Cullen die. Got so I didn't like that Harry Bryan for nothing.
Seen him lately?
See him around here sometimes. Try to talk to me sometimes. Seems like he's always trying to find a way to talk to me.
About what?
That Harry Bryan. You're a real sick man. I know. Sick inside. Something eating on him. Maybe killing that Tommy Cullen boy. Maybe something else. Anyway, he's always trying to talk to me about something else. Asking me about things. About me. How I...
About what, Frank? Frank?
I'll tell you something, mister. Girl hangs around here most every day. She knows about Harry, right?
What girl?
Girl Lorraine Miller. Comes here most every day. Pays 2 bits to the till to watch this boy's work. She knows more than I do about Harry Bryan, mister.
You know where I can find her?
Give me her address once. I never went, mister. Got it somewhere in the bottom of my locker. It's gone, mister. Yours and mine. You gotta wait till the end of another round.
So wait until another 3 minute round is done. And during this time, observe the man who presses palm to head and solemnly observes out of the corner of his eye his biceps and how muscular one flexed. Note, too, the boy who tumbles on the mat, turns somersaults, does push-ups, all very briskly, and who smiles a secret smile about what he's going to do to that guy come next Saturday night in Jersey. And midway through, the observation and wonder of a boxer who wears glasses. Round ends, and Frankie gestures you over to a locker. Opens it. Finds a piece of paper with Lorraine Miller's address written on. Hands it to you. So leave the abode of sound minds in sound bodies. Go out into the streets again, where people hurry in the heat. Squad car and find an address. It turns out to be a hotel for girls only, you're told, and you must wait here in the lobby for Miss Miller. So you do. A few minutes later, Miss Miller seats herself beside you, touches at her collared throat, tugs briefly at her skirt, then folds hands in lap and looks up at you with modesty, concern, and embarrassment.
But my first caller should be a policeman. My goodness.
I need to ask you some questions about Harry Bryan, Miss Miller.
Pitiful what happened to him. Now that you're here, I'll say it. I've closed my mind to it. Nor will I allow myself even a thought as to what has happened to him when you will have left.
How did you happen to know him?
I wish he was somebody else, not a policeman, and I could talk to you and I could tell you.
Start with why you hang around Stuart's gym.
I had hoped that wouldn't happen.
What?
That I'd be known as the girl who comes there and watches the fighters all the time. But it has happened, hasn't it? I can't help it. Something drove me to that place, and I pay my 25 cents and I walk.
Now tell me, how is he?
Harry Bryan, most of all. I wish I had a drink, a big, tall slug. Please don't repeat it, though. They'd ask me to leave this place. Harry Bryan was something, mister. He was something, that's all.
Did you go out with him often?
As often as he wanted.
Where'd you go?
Where the booze was. Where there was a place where he could talk about how great he would be again. How he was a great disappointment to his wife. And on his face, he would go out. And I would help the cabby lift him into the cab. Deliver him to Marva.
You knew his wife well enough to call him Marva.
She introduced me to him. The gym one day, she saw how interestedly I watched him. She introduced us.
I see.
Talking like this. Admitting I'd like a tall drink and all. Oh, I'm so ashamed. When you will have left, I shall despise myself, truly.
What do you want, Mugman?
Oh, and a good evening to you, Danny.
All right, what do you want?
Been doing legwork, Danny. Real hot day, and I've been doing legwork. Walking, rechecking things and people.
You got something?
Uh-huh. Guy with a big motive. Russ Cullen, who had a brother killed by Harry Bryan. Russ? Yeah, Russ, you. Get in here.
All right, Clover. Nice shot you got out there.
Thanks.
Sit down, Russ.
You mean it?
Sit down. Now tell the lieutenant what you told me in the interrogation room.
We've been together maybe an hour. I talked to you bags and bags of stuff. Which part you want me to give the lieutenant?
You listen to me. I'm tired and it's been a hot day and I've been talking to fresh mouths it seems like all my life, so you just listen
Relax,
to me.
Mugman.
One more fresh.
Maybe we better talk to you when you get over your laughing gag, huh, Russ? Come on, we're going down the hall.
Oh, you too, Clover. Don't get over eager. I'll talk to
you. All right, talk.
The part about Harry Bryan. Guess that's what your fellow wants me to tell you about.
That's right.
How I ran after Bryan like a little punk dog. I followed him around every tank town he fought in. That part, huh?
Keep talking to him, Russ.
Yeah. Ever since he killed my brother, I've been doing that. Hopping buses, trains, just as I could be where Harry Bryan was.
So you could watch him get his brains beaten in. That what you told me, Russ?
So I could watch Harry Bryan get his brains beaten in. I never got my fill of it, you know that, fellas? Till a couple of weeks ago in Scranton.
What happened there?
Bryan was a pulp. He was taken but good. Both eyes closed, bleeding from the mouth. You'd have thought I'd die from joy.
But you didn't, Russ.
No, I didn't, fella. When his fight was over, Bryan just sat down in the middle of the ring and bawled like a baby. Nobody could get him out, not even a cop.
But you did.
Yeah, fella, I did. I took pity on the slob. I got in the ring, told him who I was, said I'd take him to his hotel. He came with me. Imagine, with me, fella.
Go on.
In his hotel, he wouldn't stop crying. Kept bawling. She won't love me, Russ. She won't love me. Call my wife, Russ. Ask her to come for me. I called her here in New York. Then I walked out on Bryan. I guess she came, because next time I heard, he was fished out of the East River.
You killed Bryan, Russ?
Like I told you, fella, here. Why kill what's dead? That what I told you, fella?
Go home, Russ. Get out of here. Good evening, Mrs. Bryan. May I come in?
Yes. What do you want?
How do you feel?
That's not what you want to know. Listen, you.
What?
Listen, you. You better go in there and see for yourself. In there.
Well? I'm glad you're here, Mr. Selak.
Why?
I was worried whether Mrs. Bryan brought your car back.
You're still downtown, Selak. Mr. Clover brought me home from the hospital. Funny, you should have reminded me about it.
Don't matter, Mother. I'll get it.
Been here all day, Mr. Seeley?
Yeah. Been out for some beer, that was all. And Mother here.
What about me?
Mother won't eat. You ought to eat, Mother. I'm telling you.
Bryan.
What do you want?
Have you told Mr. Seeley how your husband died?
Sweet guy like Harry Bryan. Who wants to hear?
I felt him die. Died right under my fingers.
Sweet guy like that.
You liked him fine, huh, Mr. Seeley?
Used to fill my arena. That's not counting the personal feeling I had for him.
How about the personal feeling you have for his wife?
Kick, ain't she? You can't blame a fella.
Just a lot of fun, huh? That's what you feel for her.
Other feeling, too. You know that, baby.
Sure.
See?
You want your husband dead, Mrs.?
No.
But you didn't love him anymore.
No, I didn't.
Because he changed. Because after he killed that boy in the ring,
I told you that. Whatever happened to him happened. He was different. He wasn't the man I married.
Yellow.
The word men use. The quick word. What happened to Harry Bryan?
I tell you, he turned yellow. No good to himself, no good to you, no good
Shut
to...
Shut up.
Yes, sir.
I didn't want him anymore, that's all. I told him. He knew.
But he fought all the harder to win you back.
Getting punched.
I didn't want him. I couldn't help it.
You even tried to get him interested in other women.
Oh, I guess. So I'd have a good, honest reason for leaving him.
For him? For Freelance?
I don't know.
No, you do.
I don't know.
But your husband kept coming back, didn't he, Mrs. Bryan? You couldn't get rid of him.
He loved me. He shouldn't have loved me.
So you got Mr. Seelack to kill him.
Seelack.
What?
You killed Harry, didn't you?
You out of your mind?
You didn't have to kill him.
Kill him? What are you talking about?
I've been standing here all afternoon listening to you talk, trying to make up my mind. You look awful.
You're crazy.
You look awful.
You're crazy talking like
that.
Get
him out of here.
Listen, you said you wanted him dead, didn't
you? Not dead. Not really dead.
You said if he was dead.
Like you say that about people. Like you say they're better off dead. You don't mean it.
You're giving me to him, Marva. That what you're doing?
I guess so.
He's a kick. Ain't she? She tells me she wished he was dead, so I killed him and she was kidding. Beat him over the head with a pipe and she was kidding. Some joke. It's a street of sound, this Broadway, the echo of footsteps through the summer night, and the far-off trill of a girl's laughter, and rasping of life deep inside the earth, and the other sound, the sighs, the whispered pleas that no one hears. It's Broadway, the gaudiest, the most violent, the lonesomest mile in the world. Broadway. My beat. Broadway's My Beat stars Larry Thor as Detective Danny Clover, with Charles Calvert as Tartaglia and Jack Crucian as Mugovan. The program is produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. The musical score composed and conducted by Alexander Courage. In tonight's story, Mary Jane Cross was heard as Marva and Herb Butterfield as Felix. Featured in the cast were Lillian Baez, Roy Glenn, and Jack Moyles. Bill Anders speaking. Tomorrow night, Dick Powell, as Richard Diamond, private detective, takes on the Pete Rocco case. He takes the case strictly in self-defense, since Rocco, just out of jail, has vowed to kill Diamond, who originally sent him there. Don't miss a minute of their thrilling battle of wits and weapons on Richard Diamond, private detective, on most of these same CBS radio stations tomorrow night. And remember, for suspense all summer, hear Crime Classics Monday night on the CBS Radio Network.
The Equitable Life Assurance Society presents This Is Your FBI. This Is Your FBI, an official broadcast from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, presented as a public service by the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community. Are you one of the 50 million Americans covered by Social Security? If so, have you any clear idea of your rights and benefits under Social Security? Well, there may be a pleasant surprise in store for you. For in a few minutes, you will learn from our sponsor, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States, how easy it is to build Social Security into full security. Tonight's FBI file, Lady of Larceny. The criminal, of necessity, lives by his wits. But inevitably there comes the time when they no longer can protect him. For the criminal's habits and methods are, almost without exception, as unchanging as the spots of a leopard. And though he be cunning and ingenious enough to escape justice today, he leave behind him, as in tonight's case from the files of your FBI, the blueprint for his certain defeat tomorrow. There was nothing out of the ordinary about the scene that took place that morning in the visitor's room of a county jail in a certain state along the Atlantic seaboard. That is, nothing that appeared out of the ordinary to the stony-faced guard seated at one end of the long table, where he could watch both sides of the low wooden partition. Just a mother and her prisoner's son conversing across the partition. Talking mother and son talk. After a while, the son glances up at the clock on the wall, then...
Well, Mom, I guess our time's about up.
Goodness, it seems like I'd only been here a minute.
They don't give us very much time, you know. Anyway, it was swell of you to come to see me.
I'll come as often as they let me, Frederick.
I know you will.
And when I'm not here, you just know that you're in my heart every minute, son.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, dear, I almost forgot something.
What?
I was only able to bring you two packages of cigarettes this time.
Oh,
but...
gee, you're swell.
Oh, here. Here they
Wait
are.
Wait a minute. Hey, guard.
Yeah?
Mom's brought me some cigarettes. All right for me to take them?
Well,
why wouldn't it be all right?
I have to watch everything we get, Mom.
Well, Lansing, what could be wrong with a little package of cigarettes?
Okay for me to take them, guard?
Yeah, go ahead.
Thanks.
Well, wait now. I brought you some matches, too.
Oh.
Here they are.
Okay.
You be careful with them now, son.
What?
Well, you know you were always careless with matches.
Oh. Okay, Mom. I won't set anything on fire with them.
All right. Time's up.
Okay. Well, so long, Mom. Give me a little kiss over the fence, huh?
Of course. Goodbye, son. And I'll see you soon. Real soon, I hope.
Whitey?
Huh?
Whitey?
Oh.
I'm sorry, kid. I didn't know you were sleeping.
That's okay. It's your old lady's show.
Yeah, I just left her. Want a cigarette?
Okay.
Here you are.
Thanks. What was new with her?
That's what I'm going to find out right now.
What do you mean?
This book of matches here.
Yeah.
That's our communication system.
Huh?
See this little staple that clamps the matches and the book together?
Yeah.
This one was put in by Mom.
I don't get it.
Wait till I yank it out and I'll show you. There. I'll pull this scratch flap back.
Yeah.
Separate the two wires of matches.
Uh-huh.
And down at the bottom here, there should be a message.
Well, I'll be...
Shh, quiet, stupid.
What does it say?
Everything's set for tonight.
No kidding.
Yeah.
What's the deal?
We make the break at 10 o'clock. Mom will be waiting for us outside in a red Packard ambulance.
Ambulance?
Yeah. That's real smart. Nobody will stop us in a wagon like that.
Well, who's making the break?
There'll be eight of us all together.
Do the other guys stay with us?
No, we split up four and four.
Hey.
I wonder where your old lady got an ambulance.
Listen, kid. If we needed it, that old gal could heist a ferry boat. Mom?
Yes,
anything telling us?
No, not a soul. We got the road all to ourselves.
Swell.
I have an idea the police are following the young men in the other car.
I hope so.
What's your friend's name? One that was wounded.
Whitey.
Goodness, I hope he's not too badly hurt.
I got an idea that he is.
Oh, that's a pity. Do you think that I should go in back and see if there's anything I can do for
you? No, you stay here. The other guys will take care of him, okay?
Are they all coming with us to the hideout?
No, just Whitey. The other two get out after we cross the state line.
Oh.
Mom, I want you to know that we certainly appreciate what you've done for us.
Oh, it was nothing.
Are you kidding? Getting this ambulance, these white jackets and caps?
Frederick, it was just what any other mother would do, so forget it.
Two hours after the prison break, deputies overtook and captured the four men who had gotten away in the other car. But Fred Taylor, the wounded Whitey Monroe, and their companions were still at large. Convinced that they had crossed the state line after killing a guard, prison officials telephoned the local field office of the FBI. A few minutes later, Special Agents Norman and Perry were searching the cell which had been occupied by Taylor and Monroe for some possible lead.
Well, Perry, they seem to have taken whatever effects they had with them.
Maybe we'll get a lead out of the stolen ambulance when it turns up.
Yes. Did you check on their visitors?
Yes. Monroe had no visitors at all, and Taylor none except his mother.
I see. Well, from the guard's description, you couldn't suspect her of anything.
No.
Come on. We'll study the files on both of them and see if... Now, wait a minute.
What?
On the floor under the cot here.
What is it?
An empty matchbook.
Oh.
Bottom staple has been pulled loose and the whole match section is gone. You got a book of matches there?
Yes, right here.
Pull the staple loose, will you?
Okay. There you are.
And now spread the two layers apart.
Right.
If you wanted to smuggle a message to somebody, that'd be a good place to write it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure.
Now look at their empty matchbook. Staple is still partly in place, but look at this.
Yeah, it's a couple of other little holes.
Right. Looks like the original staple was taken out, something written or inserted inside, and then the book was restapled.
Well, what do you know?
Under the microscope in the lab, we'll be able to find the tool markings on the staple of the machine that stamped it in place.
What'll that tell us, though?
Maybe nothing we want to know right now, but maybe an awful lot later on. Here, take a shot of this, Whitey.
Okay, Fred.
How do you feel, kid?
Not so hot.
Well, we got the slug out of you anyway. So by morning, you ought to be feeling better.
I hope so.
Wish we could get you a doc. But we can't risk bringing him out here to the tourist camp.
I'll make it okay.
Try to cork off now, kid. I'm going to the other room for a little business meeting with Mom.
Okay.
Hi, Mom.
Hello, son.
Well, so you got the little office all set up. Portable typewriter, staple machine.
Yeah, I didn't see any use in wasting time.
Where's the portable printing press?
We won't need one this time.
We got to print up some checks on some company to draw money on, don't we?
I already have a book of checks, son. Look, how do you like these?
The Florida company. The big oil company, you mean?
Uh-huh.
Where'd you get these?
Now, son, you mustn't pry into Mother's little secrets. I also have a copy of the president's signature, T.V. Jackson.
Terrific.
And for the small checks, here's a copy of the cashier's signature.
Mom, you didn't miss a thing.
I run my office just as efficiently as they do theirs, son.
Okay, sweetheart. Look, stick a voucher in the typewriter, will you? Huh? We got to buy us a second-hand car the first thing in the morning.
How much do you need?
Oh... Better make it for $1,500 at least.
Then we'll staple a memo to the check explaining the money represents a bonus. How's that?
Swell.
And instead of making it for 1,500 even, I'll make it $1,472.83. That'll sound more legitimate.
That's my mom.
Oh, one thing, son.
Yeah.
I want you to be careful when you go to buy that used car. There are a lot of crooks in business these days.
There's the police garage, Norman.
Yes, I guess we can pull right in. Way enough room on your side?
Plenty.
Good morning, officer.
Good morning.
We're special agents, Norman and Perry, FBI.
Oh, yeah. How do you do? Glad to meet you.
Glad to meet you.
Hey, you fellows made a mighty quick trip down here to Charleston.
Well, can't afford to lose much time.
Well, the ambulance we picked up is right over here.
Fine.
We didn't touch a thing inside, just hauled her from where she was found.
Now, where was that?
Just outside of town. Yeah, I'd better answer that. I'll be back in a minute.
Right. I'll take a look inside, Perry.
Okay.
Find anything?
Looks like they played the part all the way.
How's that?
There's two white jackets.
Caps. I'll take the caps. You search the jackets.
Right.
These were probably already in the ambulance when it was stolen.
Yes.
These caps don't seem to yield up much, no? Oh, wait a minute.
What did you find?
Two or three strands of dark hair from whoever was wearing this cap. We'll turn them over to the lab and add them to our other little keepsakes, the match cover and staple.
Mr. Norman?
Yeah?
Your office is calling you long distance.
Thanks. Come on, Perry.
I wonder what's up.
Maybe something on the prison break.
Here you are.
Thank you. Norman speaking. What? Yes? Yes, where? What's the name of the camp? Well, never mind. We'll find it. Right?
What's up?
Two of the men who got away in the ambulance have been picked up.
Good.
They said Taylor and Monroe dropped them and then headed for a tourist camp just south of Charleston on Highway 26.
I'll bet I know the one they mean, Mr. Norman.
Fine. Guess who was with them, Perry?
Who?
Their outside help, the one who stole the ambulance. Taylor's mother.
What?
Give us the name of that camp, officer. We'll get going.
Mrs. Taylor.
Yes, young man.
Where's Fred?
Fred? Oh, he went into town.
What for?
To buy an automobile.
Taking chances, ain't he?
With the police?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sure they don't suspect that we're within 100 miles of here.
What's with the car? Are we moving on?
Well, yeah. Oh, just a minute. Who is it?
It's me, ma'am.
Oh. Well, come on in, son.
Thanks.
Did you find the car?
Yeah, I got us a real good one.
Splendid.
Fred.
Yeah, Whitey.
Are we pulling out of here?
Yeah. Mom, you better go in and pack.
But don't you think
I
that...
want to talk to Whitey alone.
Oh. Oh. Very well.
Whitey?
Yeah.
I hate to tell you this, but here's where we part company.
What do you mean?
Mom and I are pulling out. Alone.
Look, I can make it okay.
Now, you're in bad shape. You'd slow us down and get us all caught.
But I can't stay here with nobody to look after me.
Yeah, I know. Well,
then I gotta go with you.
I'm sorry, kid. You're not going anywhere.
Huh?
I really hate to do this, Whitey.
Now, wait a minute.
I gotta look out for Mom.
Fred, no, don't!
Coming, Mother.
We will return in just a moment to tonight's case, which shows how your FBI helps provide national security. Now, let's eavesdrop on a conversation about social security between a man named George Leland and his friend, the Equitable Society representative.
I don't get it.
Why would my brother and his wife need $12,000 more than my wife and I to retire at 65 on an income of $200 a month?
Because your brother is a dentist.
Well, what's that got to do with it, Milton?
Well, George, dentists aren't usually covered by Social Security. You are.
Well, you don't mean to tell me that Social Security would be worth anything like $12,000 to me.
That's exactly what I do mean. When you and your wife get to be 65, you'll be entitled to an annuity from Social Security that, at present rates, would cost $12,000 in cash.
Say, that's real money. I never realized that Social Security would be worth that much to me.
Yes, George, many Americans don't realize what a wonderful asset they have in Social Security. They have never discovered how easy it is to build Social Security into full security through life insurance. Most people are amazed when they discover how little it costs. For instance, if you already own some life insurance, your Equitable Society man may be able to show you how only a few dollars extra per month will give your wife complete protection and assure you a comfortable retirement income through the Equitable Extended Income Plan. Remember, your Social Security benefits vary according to your age, salary, and family situation. So why not get the facts? Find out exactly what you are entitled to under Social Security. The government has prepared a special card that will help you secure this information. To obtain one of these cards, get in touch with your Equitable Society representative or send your name and address on a postcard to the Equitable Society, care of this station. That's EQUITABLE. The Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. And now, back to the FBI file, Lady of Larceny.
Much has been written about honor and loyalty among thieves, but none of it is borne out by the facts. Criminals are without a sense of honor, else they would not be criminals. And the only sense of loyalty they possess is that of loyalty to self-interest. When the chips are down, they think only of themselves, and whoever stands in their way is removed by brutal force. It was not more than 30 minutes after Fred Taylor cruelly bludgeoned the wounded Whitey Monroe and drove away with his mother that FBI agents Norman and Perry pulled into the tourist camp and were directed by the owner to the right cabin.
Try the door, Perry.
Well, it's unlocked.
Let's go in.
Well, looks like they ducked out.
Yes. Must have gotten a hold of some new transportation.
Stole another car, probably.
Maybe they had one of their own waiting around here for them.
Wait a minute.
What?
One of them has been left behind.
What do you mean?
Look in there, hanging off the side of the bed.
Yeah. Come on.
He's the one that was wounded. Look.
Uh-huh. Whitey Monroe.
Oh.
The blows on the head are what he got for being in the way, I guess.
Nice couple, Taylor and his mother.
Yeah. Well, look around and see what you can find, Perry. I'm going to have a talk with the owner of the camp and then put in a long-distance call to our office.
Frederick?
Yeah, Mom?
Wouldn't you like me to drive for a while?
No, I feel fine.
You know, I just been thinking about that unfortunate young man.
Whitey?
Yes.
What about him?
Well, I had quite a talk with him when you went in to buy this car.
Yeah?
He was looking forward so to taking this trip with us. He'd never been to Florida.
Look, Mom, are you trying to make me feel like a heel?
Oh, of course not, son. Oh, you did the right thing. I just feel sorry for anyone missing scenery like this. Ow!
What's the matter?
Oh, I just jabbed myself with this crochet needle.
What is that thing you're making?
A doily.
What's it good for?
To put under a plate.
But we ain't got a plate.
Well, we're going to have. In fact, we're going to have a lot of plates and a home to go with them.
Homes cost money, Mom.
Yeah, I know.
We're never going to make any big bundle cashing these nickel and dime checks.
Yeah, I realize that, too. That's why we're headed for Palm Beach.
What do you mean?
We're going to make one big score and go under for a while.
How?
Guess who's vacationing at her Palm Beach home?
Who?
The wife of the president of the Florida Company, Mrs. T.V. Jackson.
So what?
Well, we're using Florida Company checks, aren't we?
Yeah.
Well, Mrs. T.V. Jackson, who won't know about it, of course, is going to help us cash one of her husband's company checks for $10,000.
Harry, let's review our facts, eh?
All right, Norman.
We know Taylor and his mother are a check-forging team. That's what he was in for when he broke jail.
Yes.
We also know that they've skipped. We have no idea in which direction. However, they're bound to start passing checks again, and when they do, we should be able to pick up the trail.
You sound pretty optimistic.
Well, don't forget, in addition to their descriptions, we pretty well know their methods. They always staple a phony auditing memo to each check, and they also... Wait a minute, I'll get it. Norman speaking. Yes? Yes, where was this? I see. Well, when? Uh-huh. Give me the dealer's name, will you? Right. We'll get busy right away.
What's up?
The first staple check has shown up.
Where?
A man posed as a sales agent of the Florida Company with a big bonus check. He passed it right here in Charleston 3 days ago for a used car.
Well.
The check was drawn on the Florida Company's bank, which received it yesterday and refused payment.
Does the car dealer know about it yet?
No, but I have his name. You'd better hop over and see him.
Okay.
Get a description of the man who passed the check.
Right.
Also find out the license and the make of the car.
Can I come in, Norman?
Go ahead. How'd you make out?
I talked with the used car dealer.
Mm-hmm.
From his description, I'd say it was Taylor, all right, who passed that check.
I've already confirmed that.
How?
The check was sent over here to the office. We examined the staple. The tool markings are the same as the ones we found on that book of matches.
I see.
Did the car dealer have any idea where Taylor was going?
No, but I think I've got a lead on that anyway.
Now, what is it?
Well, the dealer saw Taylor drive the car across the street to a gas station.
Yeah.
So I went over there and questioned the manager.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He remembered Taylor, said that he got some road maps from him, then asked directions for the best way to get to Palm Beach.
Uh-huh.
That doesn't mean he's headed for there, of course.
No, but it's the only definite information we have.
What's our next move?
Let's contact our resident agent in Palm Beach. Give him a description of Taylor in the car, also his pattern of operation. Then maybe we ought to hop down there ourselves. Mom? Mom?
Shh, quiet, son. I'm on the telephone.
Oh.
Now, what was that you were saying, young man? Oh. Oh, yes. Well, that's awfully kind of you. I'll send the chauffeur over to the bank right away. Thank you.
What was that all about?
I was talking to the bank, pretending that I was Mrs. T.V. Jackson.
Oh.
I said that I was going to South America and that Mr. Jackson was joining me there later.
Uh-huh.
Naturally, I needed some money for the trip.
And I'm the chauffeur, huh?
Exactly. So you take this Florida Company check for $10,000 over to the bank and they'll give you the money.
Wait a minute, I just thought of something. Huh? That guy's liable to call Mrs. Jackson at her house and just to check back.
I know. That's why I'm going to call Mrs. Jackson's home right now and keep the line tied up until you get it.
Oh.
Hurry on, son. Hurry.
Okay, Mom. We're in.
Well, good work, son.
He had all that beautiful green stuff ready when I walked into the bank.
Splendid.
Now we can ditch our hot car, buy us a nice cool one, and then lam out for a good place to go under.
I'll certainly be happy to do that.
All right.
Huh?
Don't make a move. Either way.
Who are you?
We're special agents of the FBI.
No, wait a minute, Perry.
Right.
You might be interested to know that the reason you got that money so easy, Taylor, was because our resident agent had already warned the bank.
Huh?
We could have picked you up there, but we wanted you to take us to your partner, too.
Well, son, it looks like our firm has been liquidated again.
Although forgery of the Florida Company's checks was a federal crime, Fred Taylor was turned over to the state in which he had cold-bloodedly murdered his former cellmate. Tried and convicted there, Taylor was later electrocuted. His mother is serving a term in a federal penitentiary for a conspiracy to violate the National Stolen Property Act. Yes, the criminal's habits and methods are, almost without exception, as unchanging as the spots of a leopard. And though he be cunning and ingenious enough to escape justice today, he leaves behind him the blueprint for his certain defeat tomorrow.
In just a moment, we'll tell you about next week's colorful story from the files of your FBI. And now, once again, friends, let me remind you that no matter how much you earn, you have a valuable asset in Social Security. And your Equitable Society representative will gladly show you how easy it is to build your Social Security into full security. He will explain to you how Social Security and life insurance can work together for your complete protection, and will help you determine exactly where you stand under Social Security. No obligation, of course. Phone him tomorrow. Your Equitable Society representative is listed in your local phone book under the name Equitable, E-Q-U-I-T-A-B-L-E, the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States.
Next week, we will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Friendly Hitchhiker.
The incidents used in tonight's Equitable Life Assurance Society's broadcast are adapted from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Tonight, the music was composed and conducted by Frederick Steiner. The author was Frank Ferris, and your narrator was Dean Carlton. This is Your FBI is a Jerry Devine production. This is Milton Cross speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States and the Equitable Society's representative in your community, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time when the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States will bring you another colorful story from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Friendly Hitchhiker on This Is Your FBI.
This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.